Intuitively, we feel that we are to enjoy life. And in our desire to do so, we invent various ways to celebrate this life that we are to enjoy. Now, there are times when the events of the day become a fixed routine. And we find us doing the same things over and over again. And then we find us in a bit of a rut. We are certain that the way out of this condition is to look at what we consider important and then make it special in some way. Having determined what this might be, we then direct our attention to it, commemorating what we consider vital and significant to us. Now, many of these affairs tend to be family related. Occasions such as birthdays and anniversaries, weddings and retirements. Some of what we celebrate goes beyond the gathering of family and friends. The calendar includes events that are observed by a larger audience, and they are known as holidays. And each one has its very special observance. For instance, summertime is heralded into place with what is known as Memorial Day, with Labor Day announcing that summertime is over. And then there is that amazing party that we throw on the 4th of July, when we all come together to commemorate the birthday of our nation. Yes, we do love to celebrate our special times, allowing us to escape from what we have established as our daily routine. In determining our personal celebrations, the challenge is to decide what is important and significant to us, exactly what is worthy of our time and our attention. You see, while we do love to celebrate, we also understand there must be a reason to do so. Tomorrow is Labor Day. And even though it is called Labor Day, it has been designated a holiday in celebration of the workers, meaning that for many of you, it will not be necessary to go to work or do whatever it is that you do on a daily basis. For many, Labor Day will be a free day, a labor-free day, unless we choose to do otherwise. So I got to thinking about that word labor. We tend to use the word labor and work in the same way, indicating activity of some kind. Many of the earlier divine science ministers talked about doing the work when referring to their ministry, and yet I don't think they considered their ministry to be a profession or an occupation that needed to be worked at or labored over. They talked about doing God's work. And I wondered what that might have meant to them. Now, to me, when we say we are working at something, we simply mean that we are doing it. We may consider it stressful or not. We may call it pleasurable or not. When we labor at something, we are the ones who name it, giving value and significance in a personal way. Whatever our effort might be, there is usually intent and purpose. Now, many of you have or had a chosen occupation, one that requires something of you in the way of education or experience. A chef may have gone to culinary school, learning the ins and the outs of the art of cooking. A mechanic may go to a trade school, studying the art of computerized dashboards, upholsteries, and auto mechanics. Nurses, doctors, and lawyers, they attend a school of higher learning, becoming familiar with the art of their profession. And each discovers an interesting thing. As they labor in the field of their chosen career, they notice there is a law or principle that supports their work. And when they cooperate with it, the art of their endeavor reveals itself. The chef learns about ingredients, texture, flavor, and presentation. And when he puts his dish in the oven, he does not remove it until the allotted time has arrived, telling him that it is okay to do so. You see, the ingredients in the dish are subject to the requirements of time and temperature, and it cannot be rushed to completion. Its time of completion is determined by the law that governs ingredients, time, and temperature. Now, nurses, doctors, lawyers, mechanics, they too discover the law or principle that supports their work, allowing knowledge and understanding to unfold in a natural way. When we know the law that governs something, we understand the need to cooperate with it if we wish to benefit in a personal way. The principle that supports the law of electricity, it simply does its work. It is how we use it that has meaning for us. For instance, if we use it wisely, electricity will cook our meals, and it will provide light for us to read our spiritual books. But if we misuse it, it can also electrocute us or burn down our house. Electricity stands by its principle, allowing us to either use it or to abuse it. The law of gravity is no respecter of value. It simply operates the way it is meant to. The principle is that if you drop something, it will land. The law of gravity, it does not notice or care if you dropped a paper clip or a priceless glass vase. It does not matter. It will operate according to its principle, allowing the object to fall. Music is governed by the principle of tone, pitch, and melody. Art is governed by color and shade, intensity, texture, and surface. Mathematics has its own principle that supports and gives value to its numbers. Now, to cooperate with the principle of music allows one to be known as a musician. To work with the principle of art allows one to be called an artist. The individual who consults the principle of mathematics will get the correct answer. Now, cooperating with principle is a personal matter. And really, it is helpful if we like what we are doing, allowing us to relate to it in a positive way. It might be said that the chef who views his occupation as simply a job or merely making a living will not realize it is helpful to cooperate with the principle that supports his work. In fact, he may not even know about that principle that supports his work. So, not looking at it in this way, he will not understand its value. And when he places his casserole in the oven, he will simply be slaving over a hot stove, missing the joy associated with the art of cooking. My thoughts return to those early divine science ministers. What exactly were they doing when they said they were doing the work? What does this mean, and how did they do it? Divine science ministers have discovered there is a principle that supports and gives value to what they are doing as God's work. The teaching of divine science is based on the principle of the omnipresence of God. So when the ministers did the work, they meant they were cooperating with the principle that supports the teaching. They did it through acknowledgement in this way. If God is omnipresent, everywhere present, then what else could there possibly be? If God is omnipotent, the only power, then what do we think we can do with physical might and mental thought? If God is omniscient, then what could we tell him that he does not already know? The principle is that God is, and beside him, there is none else. And when we cooperate with this principle, we are doing God's work because there is nothing else for us to do. Those who labor at a day job may consider the work that they do to be the work of their boss or of the company they work for, following what is put into place as policy and procedure. While divine scientists do God's work, they don't think of him as a boss or as an employer, and they do not consider heaven to be a company they work for. God is a source, the source of every good thing. Remember, we are told that every good thing comes down from heaven. Heaven is a state of high consciousness, and it is in us. God gave us life, his life. There is no place where God ends and man begins. This is the principle of life that supports us into eternity. Again, I consider the word labor. When we work at something, we really are simply doing it. The Bible speaks a great deal about labor. So I conclude that it is a necessary step in cooperating with God's law that governs and supports. We are told to labor not for that which perisheth, but for the meat which endureth into everlasting life. Well, clearly there must be work to be done, but it must be directed to that which is significant and lasting. No one escapes the activity necessary to bring something into manifestation, but it should not be considered stressful as enslaving over a hot stove. To me, to work at proving spiritual principle is to rest in it, abide in it, allowing it to do the work. But this is not an idle relaxation on our part. To rest in principle means that we are alert and alive to it, watching it put into place all that is contained in its idea. When the artist relaxes into the principle of art, he picks up the paintbrush, allowing the principle to put on canvas that picture that he carries in his heart, giving visibility to what was previously unseen. When we rest in the principle of the omnipresence of God, what goes before us goes before us to heal the sick, feed the hungry, and comfort those who mourn. This is the healing presence which abides in the heart of every man and every woman on this earth plane. Those of us who are here this morning have this as our ministry. Each of us is a minister, a teacher, a practitioner. You see, these designations are not given to individuals or to personalities. These identifications are given to a state of consciousness. Consciousness assigned to the one of high watch, to the one willing to lift his eyes on high, giving attention and focus to God first and above all else. When we live in this consciousness and know us in that way, we too may say that we are doing the work. This is the one who has discovered the art of the spiritual work and labors not in vain. The Bible warns us about laboring in vain. When we work at something in the spiritual arena, we are not to labor in vain. In Psalm 127, we read, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it." Now, a house is where we live. A principle of divine science is that consciousness is where we live. It is where we become aware, judge, make determinations, and decisions. Consciousness is our house, and we wish to have it as a desirable place to live. We would like to have a place that we can call home. Now, if we attempt to fill it with our personal ideas and concepts, we leave God out of the picture. The house of consciousness built by us, it will not stand, because there is no foundation to support it. You see, when we build on our own, we use material accumulated through trial and error, through mismatched baggage, a personal experience. The thing is, as we travel through life, we change our minds, our consciousness, and we reach different conclusions, building on the surface of time an opinion that does not stand still. If we insist on building in this way, we labor in vain, because nothing lasting will come of it. We can agree that when our occupation is doing God's work of ministering to others, that yes, there is work to be done. And yes, labor is a necessary activity. It's just that we are not to do our labor in vain. Any attempt at labor must be done in a positive way. Now, some of us don't even like those words, work and labor, associating the activity of stress and strain with the endeavor. But let us remember, it is the mental thought that stresses and strains, and it is the physical might builds on its own. When the Lord builds our house of consciousness, it does require our attention, but not our thought, and certainly not our might. The chef, the artist, the musician, the mechanic, they all discovered the principle that governs and supports their work. We have discovered the principle that governs God's work. Now, we do not accomplish by simply saying, it's God who does the work, let's just leave it to him. Or, God is my sufficiency, that's all I need to know. Merely repeating the affirmations that bear witness to God's work is not enough. While these statements are indeed true, they are not true to us until they are realized as our state of consciousness. This is the foundation that supports spiritual reality. And really, foundation is so important. The principle of the omnipresence of God is the foundation upon which a consciousness of truth is built. This is where we do our work, establishing us in an attitude of receptivity, acknowledgement, and acceptance. In John 5, we are told that Jesus was about his Father's business, fulfilling his ministry of ministering to the people. We read that he healed a man on the Sabbath. At the pool of Bethesda, an individual had come seeking the movement of the waters that he was certain would heal him. Well, Jesus spoke to this individual, and with his healing consciousness, he cured him of his ailment. Having done the work, Jesus then told the man to take up his bed and walk. And we are told that immediately the man was made whole, and he picked up his bed and he walked. Jesus did his work in the name of the Father. What you ask in my name will be done unto you. Now, this healing act at the pool of Bethesda, it was witnessed by those who had authority in the church, and they were not pleased. They pointed out it was unlawful to do these things on a Sabbath. Not only had Jesus broken the Sabbath, but he also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. And Jesus' response was, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." This is important information. This validates the assertion of those early divine science ministers that they must also do the work. You see, they understood that on this earth plane, that God's work gets done through them. It was Jesus' consciousness of his relationship with his Father that allowed that man to be cured of his ailment. The words, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work," approve that Jesus understood the reality, "My Father and I are one." This too should be our realization and our declaration. The purpose of today's lesson is to understand there is a principle that supports and sustains life. And when we rest into that principle of life, it will live us and move us, allowing us to be about his business and do his work. This is our purpose and our reason for being. So let us get busy and do what we are meant to do, but please, above all, let us not labor in vain. This morning we have the opportunity to turn within and acknowledge that God is, and beside him, there is none else. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? As we close our worship service, we enter a time of meditation, a time of silence and solitude. Become still and we shut the door to the outside world. We stop the chatter of thought and emotion, and we find us alone with God. This act of personal release is natural, accomplished without stress or strain. It is the mental thought that worries and frets, and in the absence of thought, there is no fight or struggle. We listen with the inner ear, going beyond the human understanding. We perceive with the eye divine, that one that bears witness above and beyond the testimony of the five senses. And we truly understand that my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways. As we leave the sanctuary this morning, we are established in a place of tranquility and serenity. God created a finished kingdom. His work is done. Let us go in peace. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within, acknowledge him, so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen. Please stand.